Welcome back into hour number two. My name is Jim Rome. Welcome to the program. Once again, live in Southern California. Great to be with you on this Monday. Hope you had a good holiday weekend. Lots to get done in the 2 hours straight ahead. As a reminder, the program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Every single Monday is something coming off the college football weekend, the NFL weekend, because you never know what you're going to get in 2020. If we get games, that's a good thing, a positive thing. Joining us right now to talk about one of the big games off the weekend is the head football coach at Oregon State. Third season there. Led Oregon State to a second place finish in the Pac-12 North last season. Tied for the best winning percentage improvement in the Pac-12 last year. Oregon State beat number 15 Oregon 41-38 on Friday. Oregon State's first win over an AP-ranked team since 2014. And they've got another big one coming up on Saturday. They're at Utah. Oregon State head coach Jonathan Smith is my guest. Jonathan, good to have you back. How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim.
Good to have you. So you've had a few days to think about this and have it settle in just a bit. But since that win over Oregon, can you take me back to Friday? You're going into a game against your rival. It's a team that is the defending Pac-12 and Rose Bowl champs. What was your message to your players as they got ready and they prepared for that game?
Yeah, it was a huge message on the preparation. You know, there's a lot of emotion and energy that goes into rivalry games and playing a good opponent. And we wanted to be able to focus on ourselves throughout the week prep, and I thought we did a good job of that. We knew it was going to be a challenge. They got some good players, good scheme, but I thought our guys did prepare really well, focused on that, not the energy of the rivalry game. And then I think it showed throughout the game, some ups and downs, some momentum swings, but our guys kept battling, trusted their prep, and found a way to win it at the end.
Jonathan Smith, my guest, I was going to say, and of course you knew there'd be adversity, so you were down double digits at halftime, then down 12 at the end of the third quarter. The weather was miserable. What's it say about your guys that they did not fold at that point?
Yeah, I think we've been that way really the whole year, understanding these games come down to the fourth quarter. College football is a long game, and there's going to be some momentum, and again, getting down a couple of scores, we still felt confident that we could move the ball. Needed to probably create something defensively, and we did. Got a turnover that changed it. Had a quick score after that. And these guys just kept believing, man. Even like we had the ball and ended up not converting on fourth down just over 2 minutes. And defense steps up huge, gets a three and out. Get one more crack at it with the ball, and then we took it down and scored.
We're talking to Jonathan Smith. What about that? Like, you took the lead in the fourth quarter. Oregon takes it back. You get the ball back. With less than 2 minutes to go, down four, at that point, what are you thinking and what's going through your mind?
Yeah, you know, we had the one timeout and had plenty of time. Where we possessed the ball was just on the other side of the 50, and so we had plenty of time to move it, and I thought our quarterback executed a high left. Tristan played great in the second half. The guys made a couple of big-time catches, too, and then, you know, we were able to finish it. We love to finish a little bit sooner on a QB sneak, but we got it done on fourth down.
Talking to Jonathan Smith, I was going to ask you about Tristan Jebbia. You and I talked about him over the summer, and he led the team down on the one-yard line. Then he gets injured. He has to leave the game just before fourth down. Knowing how tough he is, knowing how resilient he is, when he's hopping towards the sideline before the biggest play of the game, what were you thinking then?
Yeah, it was tough on him, man, because you're right. The guy is tough. He's a competitor. He wanted to be out there. But ultimately, he wasn't going to be able to execute the thing on fourth down. So I really was telling him to lay down. So we got more time to get our backup, Chance Nolan, in there to get a couple snaps with our center because we knew we were going to get under the center and run the play. So it was tough on Tristan, but I know he was fired up for Chance to go in there and finish the game.
Yeah, what about that? And then Chance goes in with 40 seconds left. He scores on that quarterback sneak. I mean, what was that entire sequence like?
It was nuts because, you know, that was Chance's first play
right in
college football. And it really came down to the O-line getting some movement inside. Those guys had played well, so well throughout the game. We were just confident we were going to be able to get that in, and Chance got it executed.
Oregon State with a big win over Oregon. We're talking to head coach Jonathan Smith. You know, it seems like it'd be pretty easy for everybody to focus on the drama of the final play, but then they'd miss out on Jamar Jefferson and his 226 rushing yards and his two touchdowns. He's gone for at least 120 yards in every single game this season, but how special was that performance Friday?
Yeah, there's no question. He's a big-time back. I mean, he's got patience, he's got vision, he's got speed. We do got some guys up front blocking well for him, but every time you give this guy the ball, he can make something happen. And he carried the load for us, almost 30 carries, had a huge run in the first series, goes for an 80-yard touchdown. And he deserves it, man. He works hard. He's a team player. He's never over there demanding the ball. He just goes back to work and makes huge plays.
Right, so you tweeted out a video of the postgame celebration in the locker room. Are you able to kind of put into words what moments like that mean to you and to the program?
Well, it's tough to totally describe, but it's just a great reminder of why we do this. And you would describe it as family around here, but for coaches, players, so many stories, guys have been overcome so much, they've come together. This program has been working so hard the last few years, and to have a signature win like this over a rival, there was just a great celebration in there, man, looking eyes and hugs and guys having a blast.
You know, Jonathan, you used the word signature. You and I have talked in the past about where the program was when you first took over and the work that you knew that you had in front of you. When you beat a rival like that, a good team like that, I mean, does that feel like that's a milestone win, a statement win?
I do. I really do. There was some heavy lifting when we took over and we went to work doing it. I think we made some progress in year two of actually winning a few games, you know, and getting our guys with some confidence that way. But then to come and take another step against your rival, top 15 team, that's a good football team that we got a bunch of respect for, but to be able to beat them down and overcome it in the fourth quarter, I think it's another step in the progression of the program.
You know, I hate to belabor the point because everybody has so much COVID fatigue, but it's like it is a real thing and it does affect the process. When you have a culture and you have a process and then something like this happens, you have to deviate and you have to adapt and improvise. I'm just curious, like, what's the whole offseason and the season been like for you going from week to week without knowing exactly whether or not there was going to be a game or what was going to happen?
Yeah, it's definitely different, man. I mean, with protocols, and you just see what's going on all across the country of games getting canceled or postponed, and you know, even portions of your roster not being able to play, still play the game, but you got portions of guys missing. It's been tough, and I do give credit to our players. We've been fortunate. I mean, we've had four games scheduled. We played four games. We've had a setback or two with a positive test, but it hasn't kept us from playing the game. And it's almost like you're getting two wins when you actually get to play the game to win, and then obviously winning the game itself.
Yeah, I mean, that's so true. Like, it was always just understood or accepted or that it was a given, but just getting to the field is a win onto itself. So a lot of time between now and Saturday, but if you have a good week and Utah has a good week, then you get that opportunity. When you look at Kyle Whittingham's team, what is your number one concern as you get ready for them?
Well, it's Kyle Whittingham's team, so they're going to be physical. I mean, he's been doing it for a decade now. Got a ton of respect for how they play the game. I mean, on defense, they've always been physical. They can run the ball. And I think that even showed up, even watching their game last week against UW, who's a physical team too. You know, Utah comes out in the game, it's 21-0, and they're stopping things on defense and scoring. So we got to make it physical and match that. It's going to be a cold night game. We got a good week of prep ahead of us, but we'll be excited to play.
Oregon State with a big win over number 15 Oregon on Friday. Jonathan Smith is their head coach. Jonathan, so good to have you back. Thanks for making time for us. Good luck this weekend.
I appreciate it, Jim.
Appreciate it, too. Jonathan Smith, what a great win for Oregon State. Statement win, milestone win, signature win, whatever you want to call it, it is that. 1-800-636-8686. All right, so we're open until the top of hour number three. Once again, an open phone line is a terrible bleeping thing to waste. Coming off the weekend you had. I've got a roundup of the entire weekend that I'll get to a little bit later on. 1-800-636-8686. I also mentioned that I made a trip down to Del Mar. Went to the track for the first time in a long, long time. We had a runner yesterday. So Janet and I made the road trip down there. At Del Mar, they allow the owners and the trainers some access, and you can go and watch. And like any other sporting event, it was awfully strange without patrons, but it was fun. Really nice to get down to Del Mar. In the meantime, why don't we take a telephone call, see what's up on this Monday, coming off the long holiday weekend. Like, how much did you eat? What did you eat? How did that go for you? I got a feeling I may or may not find out with this caller. But then again, you never know what you're going to get when a guy like this calls. Let's go to the ABQ. The REX in the ABQ. Rex in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Rex, what's up? How are you?
Good, Jimmy. Hope you're doing well. You know, I'm shocked that Matt Partition and Josh McDaniels ended up being crappy head coaches. Amazing what happens when you lose Belichick and Brady. Kind of like what happened to Mike Shanahan when he lost Terrell Davis and John Elway. But anyways, did you know why Corn in Iowa leans to the left? It's because Nebraska sucks. And so does their coach, Scofro, or Scrotox, or Scrotum, or whatever he's called. Anyways, Jimmy, I'm out.
Obviously, Alvin, you're not doing your job if you're not hitting the button on this guy. There's no way he tries to get through any phone call without getting run. Alvin's like, what? What did he say? Yeah, I think it was that thing about Iowa, Alvin. You probably should have run him at that point. Scofro or Scrotum or Scrotox or whatever he's called. It does beg the question, though. If Scofro cannot bring Nebraska back, can anybody? If Scott Frost, of all people, cannot return them to prominence, can anybody at all? I'll never forget the first time I went to Nebraska, and it was in the midst of all their glory. And it was one of the most amazing things I'd ever seen. I'd never been to the state of Nebraska before. This goes all the way back 20 years, anyway. But they were in the midst of their great, great run. And I remember going there, and I'd never seen fans that were that passionate, that knowledgeable. I mean, sure, every single fan base feels that way, but I'm here to tell you, personally, I had never seen a fan base that was that passionate and that knowledgeable. Like, when I walked around Omaha, everybody could go four deep on their depth chart, on both sides of the ball, every man, woman, and child. I'd never seen anything like it. It was amazing. I can only imagine what it must be like for a Nebraska fan right now to endure this, and to endure this as long as they have, and even worse, because they do know, if, quote, Scofro or Scroto, I like Scott Frost, I always have. I like him as a player, I like him as a coach. But the fact of the matter is, it's not working. And if this guy can't make it work, one of them, a guy who played there, a guy who won there, a guy who understands the culture of the way things are there, if he can't revamp and modernize that program and get it to where it needs to be, who can? Where do you go next? A Nebraska fan, that has got to be such a painful thing to endure. In fact, Nebraska fan, I would ask you, what is it like? How does that feel? One thing for Rex in Albuquerque to come in with his Nebraska sucks joke. But you know how it is. You know how it really is. You know how bad it really is. Maybe not Michigan bad. How about Jim Harbaugh losing to 0-5 Penn State? And by the way, I want to finish my thoughts on the Detroit Lions, because they may have fired Fat Matt Pat, but who are they going to hire now? Therese Paylor made a good point when he said, the silver lining in this is ownership. If they hire the right coach and they hire the right GM, will not meddle. They'll stay the hell out of the way and they'll let them do their job. Right. If they hire the right coach and the right GM. But what if they hire Harbaugh, the ultimate Michigan man? Then what? Everybody! Can you imagine if this guy didn't beat Rutgers? Penn State got him, and they were winless. All right, anybody else want to come in here? 1-800-636-8686. Understand this. Whoever gets that gig as head coach of the Lions is not going to have to deal with me. I'm not the problem. They're going to have to deal with Jeff in Southfield.
Hey, Matt Patricia, you may well be a rocket scientist, but it doesn't take one to know that pencil behind the ear bit was played out by the second time you did it. Why don't you replace that pencil with a comb or a razor or a toothbrush? Oh, and Matt, if you want to discipline your players with lots of rules, then why don't you show them you have some discipline over the basic rules of your own personal hygiene? Bro, your grooming is sub-wookie. Seriously, dude, Chewbacca's sister has deemed you undateable. Atlanta may have Matty Ice. In Detroit, we have Matty Lice.
Atlanta may have Matty Ice. In Detroit, we have Matty Lice. Not anymore, Jeffrey. Not anymore. Time to take that pencil out from behind your ear and start filling out the unemployment forms. Rocket Scientist, 13-29-1 is not going to get it done. And neither does being a total bleep hole to everybody you run into. So now the question, who and how will the Lions jack up hiring his replacement with? If they get the right guy, or guys, because they do need two, a coach and GM, you have what's left of Matthew Stafford's career, assuming you haven't wasted the entire prime of it. But if you're the Lions and you jack this thing up, who would the most fitting candidate be? Of course, the ultimate Michigan man, Jim Harbaugh. You know, the Michigan man who's already run the University of Michigan into the ground. That was supposed to be the easiest hire ever. That was supposed to be the biggest no-brainer ever. That was supposed to be the biggest lock ever. What that has turned out to be is the biggest disappointment ever. So you may as well just bring him in and finish off the Lions altogether while you're at it. Nice job against winless Penn State, Jimmy. Who's got it better than us? Everybody. This guy keeps falling forward, though, right? Would it surprise anybody if he were to fall right into that job? The ultimate Michigan man? Hey, Lions fans, who would you like to see get that gig? How concerned would you be if Harbaugh got that gig? And Nebraska fan, I'm looking for your takes too. How does that feel? Is there any hope there? Still ahead, my complete roundup of the long Thanksgiving weekend. My thoughts on Kansas City and Tampa Bay, and also the Rams. The Rams suddenly have a real big problem at quarterback. A real big problem at quarterback. All of that still ahead. Clones, I got one question for you. Why is Old Trapper beef jerky so good? Well, for one, there's something to be said for a family business that stands by quality and produces the world's finest beef jerky. Do not be fooled by the other brands. All beef jerky is not the same. Make sure you choose Old Trapper, where you can actually see the quality right through their iconic clear view packages. Every single bite of Old Trapper is tender. It's never tough because they use only the best ingredients, from their lean strips of beef seasoned with top quality spices to the real wood-fired smoke. Old Trapper delivers quality in every single bite. And Old Trapper jerky comes in four great flavors. Old Fashioned with a hint of brown sugar sweetness, teriyaki, peppered, and if you need a little more zing, there's hot and spicy. All are chock full of good protein to satisfy your manliest hunger cravings and to provide real sustained energy. Old Trapper is a better way to snack. Make sure Old Trapper is part of your weekly grocery list and keep a good supply on hand for you and your family. If you do not see it, ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares. Old Trapper, what is your beef?
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Sunday. Another NFL and CBS doubleheader. Early slate, highlighted by America's team, the Cleveland Browns, taking on the Titans. Key game. Other key games feature the Raiders, the Dolphins, the Colts, as they continue to make their playoff push. In the late window, you've got NFC divisional leaders squaring off. Aaron Rodgers and the Packers take on the Eagles. It all gets underway with the NFL today at noon Eastern. 9 Pacific Sunday, the NFL on CBS. This tweet is from Jeff. We can't offer the Broncos a quarterback, but we will gladly give them a nickel back. Sign Canada. Nickelback smack. That's funny. It's so funny. Why am I not even laughing or smiling? And the idiots behind the glass are. Wells in the 720 tweets. Lions fans are probably really happy and pleased with that decision. Signed Rome when NBC played Rise Against last night. I love it when I tweet it myself and then I read it. I don't have to do that. If I have something to say, I just say it. I don't tweet it and then read it. I didn't say that I was happy. I said that that was a really crappy game and a really amazing band. I said, did I just hear Rise Against? Did NBC just play Rise Against going into the break? In a really crappy game with a really amazing band. I think they like to get cute like that. They play bands from the town where they're playing the game or where a team from the game is playing. Rise Against famously is a Chicago band. And an amazing band. So that helped me for about 5 seconds. It was still a crappy game. Unless you had Green Bay and you laid the points and then you didn't care. Because there is no crappy game and a bet you win. Am I right, degenerates? I had an interesting gambling weekend. Yes, I did get down. I'll own it. Luckily, I got Janet off of online roulette. That was the big, big win. She had a brief foray into that last week. It went very badly. And I hope that she was not going to go like me and everybody else and chase. And luckily, she did not. Funny thing was, I didn't do too well in the NFL. And then our horse came in fourth, which was all right. That was a comeback race. I'll get into that. But I actually did pretty well at the window at Del Mar. So that was fun. I want to finish my thought on the NFL weekend. Actually, I've got lots of thoughts. But I mentioned Adam Gase was telling lies. Like, why would you lie? Why would you lie to the media? And more importantly, why would you lie about something that doesn't matter at all? I mean, even though they asked the question, nobody really cares who's calling the plays offensively for a soon-to-be 0-16 football team. So why would you lie about that? I mean, what a waste of time. And then speaking of lies, was there any bigger lie than this notion that Mitchell Trubisky was going to be new and improved? How hard were they working to sell that storyline last night? That he had been humbled, and he had a different perspective, and he learned, and he knew he had to approach it a different way. The new and improved Mitchell Trubisky, if and when he got that second chance, or third chance, or eighth chance. Except that when the guy hit the field last night, he looked exactly the same, only worse. And then again, you had to know that was coming, though, right? When Matt Nagy spent time last week hyping Mitchell Trubisky's, quote, huddle mechanics. He literally did that. He said, quote, whether it's a good play or a bad play or how it is in the huddle when he calls a play, I'm really, really impressed with the huddle mechanics. Getting the play into the huddle, calling the play, breaking, seeing the defense, making the calls, doing whatever we need to do. You just feel that. There's a little bit of a change there, end quote. Huddle mechanics. Homeboy is praising his huddle mechanics. Huddle mechanics. What? Derek Dooley's shower discipline didn't want any of that? That's what you're hyping your first round pick, your first round quarterback for. The guy that you took over two other legends. Huddle mechanics. The hell does that even mean? That he can gather guys around and talk to them? Is that like a special skill now? I'm telling you, man. Derek Dooley cracking on the Vols for their shower discipline and their soap technique. Cannot believe you're hyping somebody for their huddle mechanics. Yeah, good thing. Glad he's got the huddle mechanics nailed down. Now for the tough part. Now maybe he can work on his throwing mechanics. Maybe you can work on his not making bonehead decision mechanics. Then maybe you can work on his not going three and out mechanics. Or his pick six mechanics. Or his overthrowing a wide-ass open receiver mechanics. Dude, that's what you're going with? When do we get to his not staring down receiver mechanics? How about the identifying the mic mechanics? Identifying the blitzer mechanics? Having somewhere to go after option number one is taken away mechanics? Dude, that's a head coach hyping a guy's huddle mechanics. What the hell are huddle mechanics? Let's quickly go to the phones. Let's go to New York. Woody in New York. What's going on, Woody? How are you?
Jimmy, I'm fine. I hope you had a nice Thanksgiving.
I did. How about you?
Not too bad. I was in charge of getting the pies, and I hit it out of the park.
Attaboy. Well done.
Anyway, I haven't called the show since my Yankees flamed in the postseason, and you guys hit me with the Jaws music. Great thing about being a Yankee fan is the six-month illusion of the ability to win the World Series. Also, it keeps my mind off the upcoming Bears season. When the Bears were undefeated and everyone was saying, not as good as their record, not as good as their record, I knew in my heart was true. In fact, I circled this date to call in, knowing a Packers game embarrassment was on the horizon. Once again, the offense is in a free fall, and the quarterback play is absolutely abysmal. When you have your offensive guru saying in a post game the defense needs to score more, you know you are doomed for failure. I think they need to clean house, coaching, and quarterbacks. I'm sick to death of knowing my season is over by December and another great defense has gone to waste. War, Eric DePert, getting a real...
Woody! Get out of the water! Woody! Shark!
As we sound the horn to stop the fun.
Woody! Shark! Get to shore! Swim, Woody! Faster! Woody, there's a shark! Woody! He got Jaws'd again. So what is Jaws? What does that music represent on the program? It means that I have respect for you. I like you. I appreciate you. You're not getting run because I'm not soulless like that. It just means that you're not good enough to continue. You're getting played the hell off. It's like an award show when they know they've got a time limit and they're going too long and they don't care and they're running through stop signs and they get played the hell off the stage. Like that guy. Well, that guy's wife. That's what the Jaws music is. And he did reference it, did he not? Last time I called was when the Yankees came up short and you guys hit me with the Jaws music. That's two for you, Woodrow. That's two for you, Woodman.
It's two for me.
James in Sacramento tweets, Woody really sounds like he is about to break into a song with all of the reading that he is doing. Scabs tweets, when Woody calls, I find myself longing for Parody Larry. Yeah, think about the Bears, though, right? He said, "When quote, when they were undefeated, I knew they were not that good." So are we not doing a whole take on people who lie? I mean, maybe, Woody, I guess. I just know this, that when the Bears were 5-1, and I was one of those people saying, man, this whole notion about you are what your record says you are, what a lie. That's such garbage. It's such bullcrap.
Garbage.
And then Bears fans literally think that's a reason to go. Oh no, Rome. Oh no, we're that good. We're 5-1. We are that good. I'm like, come on, man. Really? Look at yourselves. Look at your quarterback. Look at your offense. You're not. You might be 5-1, but you're not that good. Oh, and looky here. Now they've lost 5 in a row. As always, I'm the better man, the bigger man. I accept your apologies. Nate Napleton tweets, thanks for the pie update, Woody. I actually thought that was part of one of the better parts of the call. I said, how you doing, Wood? What's up? How was your weekend? Good. I was responsible for the pies, and I nailed it. I said, good on you, Wood. That actually was one of the better parts of the call. Let me ask you something, Nate. What did you do? What was your responsibility other than eating pie? I don't know, Nate. Don't be throwing stones at glass houses. Don't be throwing pumpkin pies at brick houses or something like that. How'd the weekend go, yo? How much did you eat? How much did you drink? How much did you work out? How crappy do you feel about yourself right now? And are you back on the path or not? I've got a full roundup of stuff that happened over the weekend. Also, still ahead, a conversation with Andy Staples. Hey, listen, I know you think you can do better than what you just heard, so prove it. Step up. Pick up the phone and do better. 1-800-636-8686. Let's get you a sports update. If that...
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
I do have to remind you that not all beef jerky is the same. Old Trapper, for instance, is better for you, and it's higher in essential protein than chips, sugar-filled energy bars, or candy. You want to make sure you ask for Old Trapper by name because no other jerky compares Old Trapper. Exactly what is your beef? Welcome back. My name is Jim Rome. I'm host of the Jim Rome Show. Andy Staples joins me at the top of the hour. Hey, let me give you a telephone number. We still do our podcast, the original Side Hustle, the Jim Rome podcast, and we push that out every single Wednesday. As part of that podcast, we still run your voicemails. That's not something I'm going to do forever. It's something I do still do, however. And the reason for that is, you know, I can do certain things on that podcast that I can't do here. Well, we can take certain telephone calls on that podcast that we could never take here. That's the point of that. And also, if you want to work up your confidence, get some reps in, that's another good way to do it. Put this number in your phone, 949-385-0447. 949-385-0447. We are still rolling telephone calls. Once again, I have conversations there that I could never have right here, and we take telephone calls there that we can never take right here. 949-385-0447. So again, how'd that weekend go for you? Thanksgiving. You had the feast. You still have leftovers, I'm sure. And to me, that's like a perfect analogy for the weekend itself. You had the feast of the NFL. And then you've got the leftovers of everything happening around it. I haven't even covered the entire feast. I got to a lot of it. But you have the feast, which is the NFL, and then all the other leftovers. As an example, why don't we start with the fight? Or whatever the hell you want to call what went down on Saturday night between Mike Tyson and Roy Jones. Now, let me say this. It did come off better than expected. In fact, I'd even say it came off a lot better than anybody expected, except for former NBA point guard Nate Robinson, who got put to sleep by a YouTuber and then woke up to a Twitter roasting, the likes of which nobody's ever seen before and which is still ongoing. Like, I'm not trying to make light of anybody's health ever, but old Nate knows what he signed up for. He knows what he signed up for. Maybe he wishes that he was still face down on that canvas instead of sitting upright, reading his phone, and scrolling, because it's still not going very well for him. And it won't be going very well for him for a long time. As for Mike, who still scares the hell out of me, and Roy, they fought to a draw. Because, of course you're going to fight to a draw in a fight that wasn't supposed to be scored anyway. And again, not the worst thing ever. I just can't really take it that seriously when Indica Mike copped a smoking weed before getting into the ring. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with getting baked. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with boxing. I just don't know that getting baked before you box is the best idea. Like, how seriously can you take it if Mike is getting lifted and slowing down his reaction time before a quick twitch, quick reaction sport? Anyway, that's about all the run I want to give that. Like, not bad. Not bad, not great, just a thing. Now, you want to talk about something that was pretty bad. How about the ending to that Syracuse-NC State game on Saturday? In case you missed that, Syracuse driving late in the fourth, down a TD, in the red zone, 20 seconds to play, third and goal. Couple of plays to get seven. Unfortunately, Q's quarterback, Rex Culpepper, made a couple of pretty poor decisions. Two of the worst decisions you're going to see in football. First, he took a totally inexplicable sack, given the situation. Given the situation and where he was at that time, on the field, in the game, that's pretty much unthinkable.
Here's Culpepper looking left. Now backs up. Here's McNeil chasing him around. Culpepper with 15 seconds left takes the sack.
You got to go. Taj Harris is hanging out in the end zone. You got to get back to the line.
Orange will have to hurry quickly.
Can't spike it.
It is fourth down. They get it snapped and he spikes it. And the ball game will end. It was fourth down. NC State, I believe, has won this ball game.
Just your classic burn the clock and take a massive sack, then spike the ball on fourth down. Mind melting. I've always been pretty careful about this. Like, college kids aren't paid. They're not professional. So I'm not in the business of tearing apart a college kid because he's not professional. They're not paid. I'm not going to start right about now, but that was pretty brutal. That was pretty brutal. Tom Brady, for instance, taught us all this year that there is not a fifth down in football. And if there's not a fifth down for Tom Brady, then there sure as hell is not a fifth down for Rex Culpepper. Spiking the ball on fourth down is the equivalent of, I don't know, ripping the eject lever in a fighter jet. 1 second, you're flying around, everything's good at 500 miles per hour. The next second, you're in the sky without a seat, attached to your ass, wondering what the hell just happened and why your airplane is burning in a heap down below your dangling feet. Unfortunately for Rex, he earned his second dog name of his young adult life. From Rex to Spike.
Rex is a dog name. Rex is a dog name.
So is Spike. So is Spike. I feel badly. I feel badly for the kid, and I feel badly that I had to do that. But I had to do that, even for a college kid. That was a rather unfortunate sequence, was it not? Speaking of quarterbacks who went household in college, Tim Tebow just dropped a brand new clothing line. Well, that's not entirely true. He dropped a brand new shirt.
Timothy Tebow.
Because apparently this guy does not need a clothing line when he has a single shirt, which will work for every single occasion. Over the weekend, he excitedly tweeted, quote, "Excited to share something I've been working on for a while. The Victory Cut Performance Shirt!" Exclamation point. I needed a shirt that was custom made and could go from the stage to TV to the boardroom to the weight room. I'd love you all to check them out. End quote. Attached to the tweet are four pictures of Tebow wearing a collared button-down dress shirt on stage, on TV, in the boardroom, and yes, while doing bicep curls. Right, because nothing says getting your pump on like throwing weight around while dressed for a job interview. My man, does that shirt also include a suit jacket and a tie? Like, who told Tebow that having a dress shirt for working out was a good idea or something anybody wanted or needed? Is he that pressed for time that he can't be bothered to change from his gym clothes into his, quote, boardroom clothes, or vice versa? Phil Mickelson's long-sleeve dress shirts for golf cannot believe Tim Tebow's button-down collared shirt for working out.
Anyway,
if you want to be the first person ever, besides Tebow, to wear a collared button-down to the gym, by all means, grab one of these for Christmas. And finally, in the leftover department, apparently word got back to Greg Norman that the entire internet's jaw had been on the floor for an entire week after getting a glimpse of his walk-around hammer. And wouldn't you know it, a source close to the Sharks said that Greg the Leg was, quote, amused by it. Yeah, I'm sure he was. Who wouldn't be? I'm sure Norman has been up for 7 days straight reading every last comment. It's not exactly the worst thing in the world to be known for. The entire world marveling at your unit. Of course you're amused. Just like, of course, you're not admitting to knowing that it was a very flattering pick before you posted it. Because the same reporter asked the source if Norman knew the outline of his hammer was on full display. And the source said that Norman is not saying one way or another. Which means, of course, he knew. If you post a picture, don't you look at it 100 times before you post it? It was up on his Instagram feed. Of course he couldn't wait to post it. Of course he knew. Greg the Leg, man. I'm not saying any more about that. You're 64 and you've got a six-pack and nobody notices it. Man, of course you got that hammer. He knew it. He posted it. He posted it. That wasn't one of those deals where one of the tabloids went with one of those unbelievable zoom lenses from 5 miles out from some island and got it. He posted it. Oh, I'm mildly amused. Oh, I'm shocked that there's this kind of reaction. Sincerely, a guy who's been up 4 straight nights reading every single comment on every single website. And that there concludes your Thanksgiving leftovers roundup. Hit the bricks, man. Get a run in. Move some weights around. Do some cardio. When we come back, a college football reporter for The Athletic, Andy Staples, joins us. Stay tuned.